It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later, our guest says it's time to rewrite Wisconsin's constitution, to fix redistricting, the state Supreme Court, even redraw county lines.
First, we're spending some time today getting to know the candidates running for Secretary of State here in Wisconsin. We already heard from Republican Julian Bradley and Jerry Breutzman of the Constitution Party. They're both looking to reform the office, but our next guest has a different idea. Let's get rid of it altogether, he says.
Joining us now is Andy Craig. He's the Libertarian candidate for Secretary of State here in Wisconsin. Andy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me back on.
So, basic question, why are you running for Secretary of State?
I'm running for Secretary of State because I think it's long past overdue that we had something different in state government in Wisconsin. And I'm running for Secretary of State in particular because it's time to get rid of a do-nothing office that is a distraction and, at worst, possibly even a threat to clean and fair elections.
Now, your opponents want to restore powers that have been lost by the office rather than trying to eliminate it. Make the case that the office isn't worth fixing.
Sure. Well, the main traditional function of a Secretary of State, and like my opponents are fond of saying, in most states, what they do is they run elections. In Wisconsin, we don't do that, and there's a very good reason why we don't do that. If you let a partisan elected official decide who gets on the ballot and how the votes are counted and how the rules are enforced, then it creates a conflict of interest, and you're setting yourself up for something like Florida in the year 2000 with Katherine Harris. So that's the, Secretary of State is not just it's a harmless oddity, though it is that, it has the potential to become something truly undesirable if my opponents who want to restore the office get their way.
They've also called for bringing back some of the business, approving corporations, that kind of thing, to the office more than the elections. The incumbent, Doug LaFollette, says the reduced role of the Secretary of State's office is hurting business interests here in the state. If that's true, would eliminating the office hurt business interests here even more?
This idea is a little ridiculous. The idea that out-of-state businesses can't handle the fact that different state functions have different names and are under different offices in different states is absurd. Three other states already do just fine without a Secretary of State. Several others, it's not an elected position. And several others, it doesn't manage these responsibilities. For the supposed voice of Wisconsin's progressive heritage, I don't see being an ambassador to major corporations as something I would want to do with a public office.
Now, if elected, you couldn't single-handedly remove the office. It's a constitutional office, no self-destruct button there. As Secretary of State, how would you advocate for an end to that office?
Well, I think one of the strongest ways to get it done would be put a Libertarian in the office, and the Republicans and Democrats will finally get it done and fire me. That'll happen pretty promptly, I think, just from the fact that finally there's somebody in the office who is not one of their team members that they're having to put up for. And then the other thing is I would work closely with both sides of the aisle in the state legislature to advocate other necessary nonpartisan constitutional reforms, like nonpartisan redistricting and some of the ones you were mentioning with your guest coming up, which I'm looking forward to listening to.
So given that you're neither Republican nor Democrat, do you think either side would have incentive to sit down, hear you out, and try to work on changes with you?
Well, if they don't sit down and hear me out, their incentive will be to do what I was elected on and eliminate the office finally. If they do sit down and work on me, there'll be a lot of important ideas that aren't being heard in the current two-party debate that I'll bring to the table. So either way, it's a win-win.
Now, while working toward the end goal, you technically would be Secretary of State. What would you be doing in the meantime while trying to get the process going to end this office?
Sure. Well, the remaining powers vested in the office are truly trivial. Nobody, over keeping and fixing the Great Seal, publishing a few things. It's a task that could be done by the office computer. But one thing that does happen in Wisconsin is if both the governor and the lieutenant governor are out of the state, then the Secretary of State becomes acting governor. And that's a bit of an anachronism. It's a silly thing to only last for a few hours, and it's never been used to any substance. But one act of the governor is inherently irreversible, and if I was in the position of being acting governor for a brief period of time, I would start issuing pardons, and my pen could fly faster than the governor's jet could return him or her to the state.
So would you see that as an incentive to make sure the governor or lieutenant governor stay on the job here?
If that's how they take it, then, again, it's a win-win. But it's usually they go to the national conventions and stuff together. So it Not too many people stay in state for 4 years at a time, but I guess it's possible.
Now, one of your opponents, Republican Julian Bradley, said he'd use the position of Secretary of State, among other things, to act as an ambassador, as the lieutenant governor has, trying to help out-of-state businesses, help lure them into Wisconsin. Would you want to do something like that while in the office?
Absolutely not. I do not see it as my job or any public servant's job to go to a particular business and say, come here, we'll give you this goodie at the taxpayer's expense if you move here. The way we create jobs and bring businesses to Wisconsin is by having a low tax, low regulatory environment that encourages business growth and job creation across the board for businesses that are already here and businesses that are looking at moving here. This endless special interest giveaway is endemic to both parties in Wisconsin, and it's entirely corrupt.
Now, the state treasurer is another constitutional office that some people said, hey, let's get the ball rolling and eliminate that office, too. Is that something you'd support?
That's something my running mate for state treasurer is supporting, and I wouldn't oppose it. There's legitimate reasons why some of those roles have been subdivided, separating revenue from accounting, other things like that. And I also go further and say lieutenant governor. If you look at all the states in the country that have gotten rid of, combined something similar with lieutenant governor, secretary of state, and state treasurer, you're talking about a majority of the states in the country. And the lieutenant governor here doesn't do anything either, doesn't have any statutory power, has, you know, for all three of these offices, the number of candidates this year outnumbers the number of employees. So instead, I think we should get to elect substantive positions like the head of the Department of Transportation or the Department of Natural Resources.
Now, this getting rid of the state treasurer and the secretary of state would take votes in two sessions of the legislature. It would take a voter approval and a referendum. Is this something you think people are worked up enough about to make this go through the legislature and be brought up by voters?
Well, that's kind of an interesting comment on government. Where else does an obsolete, wasteful position continue to spend money out of apathy? Anywhere else you do that, you go out of business pretty quick. It doesn't have to be a high priority issue for the state to discuss for 4 years. I don't think that's plausible, but there's no reason the legislature can't get it done. And I'm confident if it was put up to a vote, it would pass. It's been talked about for decades in Wisconsin. It's time to finally make it happen.
Now, if I may ask some about Libertarian Party strategy some here, why run for this, as you say, obsolete statewide office instead of trying to get candidates in the legislature to start the ball rolling to get rid of the office?
Well, we're doing both. We have a full statewide slate, and we have a half dozen legislative candidates this year. But as far as seeking statewide office, one reason is our status as a legally recognized ballot access party in Wisconsin was unjustly taken from us when we had actually met the threshold. And if I or any of my running mates for statewide office get just 1% or more this year, then we will have full ballot access again in the state, and we will be able to put our presidential candidate on the ballot just like the Republicans and Democrats without having to spend tens of thousands of dollars on tens of thousands of signatures.
And with that ballot status, do you think that you can get enough attention from the two major parties to get at least a libertarian inflection in their decision-making?
I have no doubt that the Libertarian Party has already accomplished that in many areas and will continue to do so. This is going to be a breakwater year for the Libertarian Party. We're looking at the first time in American history that over 2 million voters will vote for a third party for top-of-the-ticket races during a non-presidential year. And that has an impact on the behavior of the major parties. When, you know, Team Blue is worried about appealing to socially liberal voters and Team Red is more worried about appealing to fiscally conservative small government voters, then I think both of them are going to move in a more positive direction.
What, I assume you're hoping to win, but what would success look like for a Libertarian candidate for Secretary of State short of actually winning the seat?
Well, obviously the point is always to win, but short of winning, I would say a good goal is to beat the difference between the Republican and Democrat.
And can you leave us with your final message to voters just shy of 2 weeks from Election Day and as people are out there maybe right now early voting?
I would say that unlike any of the other candidates in this race, I'm not going to make you a bunch of big promises about what I will do with powers this office does not have and never will, regardless of who wins. I'm being honest with you that it's time for this job to go, and I will make it happen. And in the meantime, you'll get your bang for your buck with an independent voice for reason, freedom, and reform in Wisconsin state government.
All right, Andy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Andy Craig. He joined us from our studios in Milwaukee. He's a Libertarian candidate running for Wisconsin's Secretary of State.
Today on the show, we're talking with the candidates running for the office of Secretary of State. We've already spoken with Republican Julian Bradley, Libertarian Andy Craig, and Jerry Breutzman of the Constitution Party.
Now we hear from the man who's held the office for close on 40 years. Doug LaFollette is a Democrat. He's Wisconsin's current Secretary of State. Secretary LaFollette, welcome to Central Time.
Good afternoon. Hello, everybody. It's good to be here.
Well, you've been the Secretary of State for about four decades now. Why are you running now for another term?
Well, two things. I like my job very much. I've got great coworkers. I get to walk to work and back every day. And most importantly, I get to help people across the state. I travel around the state and I meet with people. They know they can contact me or contact the office and get help and assistance where they need it. And secondly, I'm committed to try to restore the duties to the office that are so important. A couple of Republican governors, my opponent's party, took those duties away, and it's made it very difficult for people to try to start a new business or get a trademark. And I want to try to work with the next governor and with both Republican and Democratic legislators to restore those duties to make Wisconsin much more open for business and help our climate for the business, not just for me, but for the future of Wisconsin.
What specific duties would you like to see brought back to the office?
Well, the key ones are those that relate to business. If you want to start a new business, you need to incorporate. If you want to get a trademark, if you want to check on what's called Uniform Commercial Code, commercial loaning systems, if you want to get a notary public, those all relate to businesses. And here's the key thing. All across the country, in every state, secretaries of state have those responsibilities. And they were in the office when I was elected. And I worked hard to make it one of the best secretary of state offices in the country, with a great website, with expedited service programs, a lot of great things were going on. And then Governor Thompson decided he wanted to control everything, and he took those duties away. And it's been very harmful to Wisconsin's business climate.
Well, as Secretary of State, how did you advocate with Governor Thompson or fellow Democrat Jim Doyle or the current governor, Governor Walker, to try to bring those back?
Well, I've tried to work with them. Governor Thompson wasn't interested. He got to appoint four of his friends to high salaries in that office, and Governor Doyle was too busy with other things. I did get some support from Republican legislators on several occasions. I met with Governor Walker, and he had a different agenda, as much of us have learned the last 3 years. So I'm hoping if we get a new governor, I'll sit down with them and with the legislators on the important committees and see if we can't get this done. I've been working at it, and we're going to do it.
Well, but now in Wisconsin, it's not impossible to do the things you listed related to forming businesses. It's just through another office. Are we losing anything by just having it be a different phone number, a different website?
It makes it hard for people to find it because they're used to being the Secretary of State's office. Now, again, it's possible. But people get confused. Every day we get phone calls and emails, I and my staff, looking for those things. So sure, you can find it if you work at it, but should we make people work hard to start a new business or to get a trademark? I don't think so. We should be like the rest of the country.
Now, we've heard from a couple of the candidates saying that secretaries of state in other states often are the ones in charge of elections administration in their state. Would you like to see that part of the office here in Wisconsin?
I don't think that's a good idea. We thought a lot about that, and we saw the kind of fiascos that happened in Ohio and Florida when an elected official, a partisan Republican or Democrat, in those cases, in both cases, they were Republicans, tried to fuss around with the election process. And we're seeing that even now. We're seeing that, I believe it's in Georgia right now, where the Secretary of State and Kansas, the Secretary of States are making trouble within the election process. So I think the decision in Wisconsin made before I was elected to set up an independent board that manages the election, it may not be perfect, but I think it's the best thing we can have.
We just heard from Andy Craig, the Libertarian candidate, running on the platform of eliminating the office of Secretary of State. The Wisconsin State Journal's endorsement in the office is for eliminating the office of Secretary of State. How do you make the case that, against a lot of people saying get rid of this, how do you make the case that this is still something Wisconsin needs?
Very simple. I believe in democracy. I believe that the people should elect their leaders, whether it's school board or secretary of state or governor. And that's the principle we operate under. Then you know who that person is. The man or woman who's elected had to campaign, had to travel the state. You know who they are. That makes sense for our democracy. And every other state has secretaries of state. I mean, why should Wisconsin be so funny and different? I don't think that's the way we want our future to be here.
Now, your Republican opponent foresees using the position in part as a cheerleader for jobs in Wisconsin, reaching out as lieutenant governor has to try to bring business owners, relocate their businesses, open up operations in the state. Do you think that that's a good use of the Secretary of State position?
Well, of course, and I'm always promoting Wisconsin, either when I have a chance to be on some news program or if I happen to be traveling around the country and get interviewed. I always promote Wisconsin as a great place, and I think that I'll continue to do that. But again, the important thing is to make it easy for those people to start a business here, and that's what I want to try to work on.
Now, one criticism you got from Republicans in particular was after the passage of Act 10, holding off on your then responsibility of finishing the job and putting the law into print and into effect. What do you say to criticism of that?
They don't know what they're talking about. In this office, we have always published acts on the 10th day. We published 97% of all the acts that were passed by the legislature on the 10th day. If there's some emergency, for example, there was a bonding issue where the state was involved in a bonding process, and that had to be done on a certain day. So we called the newspapers, we got that fixed. But unless there's a big emergency, you should wait 10 days, which is what we always have done. And there was no emergency here. In fact, there were lots of controversy, that there were legal actions pending. School boards and city councils were concerned about how this would affect them. It was a very big change. I did the conservative thing. I waited the same 10 days we wait on almost every single act that we publish. And, of course, they got angry. They didn't like that. They wanted what they wanted immediately. Well, that isn't good government.
One plausible outcome on Election Day is that you might be reelected and Governor Walker and the Republican legislature are reelected. So is that just more spinning wheels for you on trying to bring back the duties you're hoping for?
Well, who knows? I've been working on it. I'll keep on fighting because that's what I believe.
And are you concerned, in that situation, that the Republican legislature might start the ball rolling to amend the Constitution and eliminate the office?
Well, they've tried that several times. The people do not want to eliminate their elected officials. They've never gotten very far with that, and it has to go to the people. It's got to be a referendum of the people of Wisconsin. And the people, like myself, believe in democracy, I think.
Now, we talked about the business aspects that you'd like to see restored. You're not wild about the idea of election responsibilities going to the office. Are there any other new duties that you'd like to see added to the Office of Secretary of State?
Oh, nothing in particular. I mean, there are things that come up occasionally that other secretaries of state have been in charge of, and I've learned that from my colleagues around the country. But the key important thing at the moment is to restore those business functions so Wisconsin will be like the rest of the country, and also to protect the school trust lands. I'm a member of the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands, and that's one thing that would be very much harmed if they try to eliminate the Secretary of State and the State Treasurer, because the two of us serve on that land board. We maintain and protect about $1 billion of trust funds for the school children of Wisconsin. And every month, we loan millions of dollars to schools and cities and towns around the state, and the interest from that money comes back to the school public libraries. This year, we're scheduled to give $35 million to the Wisconsin school libraries for the children of Wisconsin. And if they want to try to eliminate those positions and put the governor or legislators on there, they can't wait to get their hands on that $1 billion, and I'm dedicated to protect that money as an independent elected official. That's a very important job I have.
Election Day, it gets closer and closer. Can you leave us with a final message for voters?
Well, I think my qualifications are the ones that should be elected. I've been a professor teaching chemistry, a state senator from the Racine-Kenosha area. I have been the director of a Mid-American national nonprofit organization. I think I have the qualifications and the experience to do the job. I don't know what qualifications my opponent has. He says he wants to change. He used to be a professional wrestler. He worked with the Republican Party, but that's all. And I think I have the qualifications and the experience. And the important thing, people, is get out and vote. You can vote now, and it's important, and you do not need an ID. No ID is needed. Everybody should get out and vote.
Thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. It's good to be here.
That's Doug LaFollette, Wisconsin's incumbent Secretary of State. If you missed any of our interviews today with the candidates for Secretary of State, head over to wisconsinvote.org. You'll find archived audio, schedules for upcoming forums, and much more. It's time for Wisconsin Life. Wentz Martinez grew up in a Mexican town famous for its weaving. When he ran across a drawing by Milwaukee artist Sandra Hackbarth, the two began an artistic collaboration that grew into love. Today, Wentz and Sandra Martinez share their art and their lives in Door County.
Well, it's a tradition in my village where I was born from, you know, that the weaving has been passing on for many, many generations. So you learn from your grandfather to your dad. My older brother helped me learn. So I used to watch my dad weave at night. I would sit under the loom and watch his hands and weaving. And I always thought, man, I can't wait to help him. When I got to be nine, I reached the loom. I could reach the loom, and I started weaving.
I was an obsessive potter from the age of 14 in Milwaukee. And even before then, there was a sandbox out back, and I would dig through the sand to get to the clay underneath the sand and then make stuff out of it and then be a complete mess. I developed these personal drawings that are like primitive drawings. They're very stick figure-ish. They're very simple. I was in Chicago, and my girlfriend from college said, I've been to this incredible village where they are incredible weavers, and they could weave anything. And I think your drawings would look really cool as a weaving. So give me one, and I'll take it there. And so I did. I gave her this little, you know, it's a little ink painting on, you know, some terrible newsprint.
I said, man, that looks very interesting. So I said, okay, I'm going to do that. And so I wove that piece, and you know, after we finished it, we shipped it back to the U.S.
6 months later, this thing arrives that's 4 by 6 feet from this little painting. And it is so true to the hand-drawn line that I was completely enamored with it. And I wanted to meet the weaver who made that piece, and I wanted to collaborate and do more work with that exact person because the spirit of him was so evident.
First of all, when we met, we just got it so attracted to each other. And then I came here, and then that's when we started like getting more serious about our relationship. And I didn't speak English back then. She didn't speak Spanish. So we bought two dictionaries, exactly the same. So she would say something, and we spent like hours and hours to be able to communicate.
I think it was completely natural. Really, from the minute we met, we just felt like we were connected at the hip. And so it was just natural to say, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Now there's a rhythm of almost one and one, where Wentz will weave one of your pattern-driven pieces.
One of mine and one of hers, and it depends. And sometimes I see her painting that looks so beautiful, I can't wait to weave that, so I'll do two of hers and wait for mine.
We love it. I don't think we'd be happy any other way. You know, we struggled so hard to be together that once we were together, we're grateful for that. That's a gift.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. Find more Wisconsin Life on Wisconsin Public Television Monday nights at 8:30 and online at wisconsinlife.org.
Wisconsin's Constitution was passed with the birth of the state back in 1848. While it's been amended now and again in the century and a half since then, it hasn't seen any kind of major overhaul.
Our next guest says it's time to change that. He wants to see a constitutional convention in the state to tackle fundamental issues like redistricting, Supreme Court judge selection, county boundaries, and more. Ed Huck joins us now. He's the former executive director of the Wisconsin Alliance of Cities, and his piece on the state's constitution is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Ed, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Well, we'll get into the particular issues, what you're calling for, but in general, why do you think we need a constitutional convention?
Well, generally, when we went and looked at this issue 10 years ago with my organization, we came to the conclusion that the state legislature, although has the ability to tinker with the Constitution, a major overhaul would have to be done by a convention. The years I've spent working with the state legislature, I can assure you, getting consensus on any single question is quite difficult for the leadership. Making major changes to the Constitution shouldn't happen in the legislature, and it's highly improbable it could happen in the legislature.
So you don't think constitutional amendments would get the job done, you know, in a more typical fashion?
Well, it can address critical issues from time to time, and that's fine. It works well in that manner. We have one coming up, a question on November 4th, a very important question about whether the transportation fund should be sacred or not. The issue, though, that I'm speaking to is the very structure of state and local government. Constitutional officers, both at the county as well as the state level, and some issues that, like Supreme Court justice election and redistricting, which have been difficult to get the legislature to deal with. And at this particular point, we are in a state of old government, a lot of government, old government. And frankly, the question of whether we should be more modernized is something we're going to have to address at some particular point if we're going to compete for jobs and people in the future.
What exactly would happen at a constitutional convention?
Well, the most recent convention is the Illinois Convention of 1970-1971. And when the Alliance of Cities looked at this issue 10 years ago, we interviewed Professor Olean from the University of Wisconsin, Michael McChrystal from Marquette Law, and myself went down and we interviewed Dawn Clark Netsch, who at the time was with Northwestern Law. She was a former Democratic candidate for governor, and she was also a delegate to the 1970 convention. And she spoke about how the delegates divided up the Constitution, went into work groups, came out, made presentations to the body as a whole. The body would then thumbs up, thumbs down, recommend amendments, go back to work. And so it was a group of delegate committees working on different parts of the Constitution that recreated the Illinois Constitution 40-odd years ago.
All right, well, let's get into some of your suggestions, what you would like to see looked at a constitutional convention. At the top of your list is redistricting reform. What kind of changes do you want to see?
Well, redistricting is one of those issues that is becoming apparent that both parties have devolved into gerrymandering the districts in order to maintain a political edge over a 10-year period, which is the time period which the lines are redrawn. What that creates is not only an imbalance in terms of real representation, it creates divisions because districts become so one-sided that their representatives take either a very conservative or a very liberal position. Compromise is more difficult under those circumstances. We've seen this play out not only in the state of Wisconsin, but in the U.S. Congress. And so what we, those of us who have been witnesses of this over a period of time, we also see that it's when the time comes near the redrawing, politics kicks into high gear, and nothing really gets done at the state level. And it's not productive, and in fact, it has become apparent to many that it's counterproductive.
So who should get to draw the lines, if not the power and party, Democrats or Republicans?
Well, we take a look at the Iowa model, where there's an independent commission. We could draw on retired judges. There's a variety of possibilities that could be looked at. Certainly, someone who is more interested in square borders and competitive districts, and you're not going to find those folks in the legislature.
And then in addition to taking a look at redistricting, you also think we should be looking at county lines. Why county lines?
Well, there's a couple. First, there's a couple areas of the state. There are over 70 cities in the state of Wisconsin that are in multiple counties. The city of Appleton is in three counties. And so when you try to deal, when you're a city like Appleton or Marshfield, which actually tried to get Wood County redrawn some years ago because they were having difficulty with the county seat being so distant from them. Appleton finds itself in mostly in Outagamie County, which is a very rural county, and consequently, they get very little help from the county. You go down into southeastern Wisconsin, you've got Racine and Kenosha, which are both located on Lake Michigan, but the western parts of the county are so rural, they similarly have problems with getting consensus on urban issues because the county is so divided. So as you look around the state of Wisconsin, the question is, first of all, do we need 72 counties? And the short answer, in my opinion, is no. And if you don't need them, then should we redraw them so that they're more functional for other local governments? And that could be done. It would indeed be expensive initially, but in the long run, it would have some practicality to it.
We're talking right now with Ed Huck about his recent piece in the Wisconsin State Journal. He says Wisconsin needs a constitutional convention to tackle some fundamental issues in state government.
Ed Huck stays with us. He's calling for a constitutional convention here in Wisconsin to deal with a variety of fundamental issues in state government, from redistricting to Supreme Court justice selection to switching to a one-house legislature.
And you can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. Does the state constitution need a rewrite? What do you think should change? Do you agree with some of the particular suggestions? We've been talking about cutting down the number of counties, talking about redistricting. We'll be getting to a new suggestion for appointing Supreme Court justices. Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Ed, before we go any further and get to our callers, you want to change the way we pick Supreme Court justices. Why?
Well, the question of politics and money and how our judges have been selected in the last two or three elections has been one that has gotten the attention of many editorial boards around the state, as well as others, in terms of blatant lies that have been come across the television screen about what the candidates are, who they are, and what they've done, and it has gotten so ugly, and there are some questions about qualifications that we need to look at the merit system as a possibility. And this is not a proposal that comes from Democrats or Republicans. It's a proposal that comes from both. The current Secretary of Transportation, former Representative Mark Gottlieb, made a very thoughtful and very desirable proposal to his caucus. He He actually introduced legislation at one particular point. Didn't get very far with it in his own caucus. But the fact of the matter was that he, like others, felt it was time. Will the legislature go this particular route? Well, there are some very influential groups that like to spend money for Supreme Court justices, and it would be very difficult, if not impossible, to get that through the legislature. But I think it's critical for the future of the state.
We're going to go to our callers now and take a first call from Nancy in La Crosse. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Ed. It's Nancy McCarthy. I used to work with you way back in the 80s and 90s.
Yes, I know. Hello.
Hi. Nice to hear you on the radio again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I have deep support for your idea of a constitutional convention. However, I just, and I know you know, that given the divisiveness of our current political situation, how are we ever going to get a number of people to build consensus within a convention? How would these people be appointed or elected to a convention?
Well, this is part of thank you, Nancy. This is an excellent question. In other states, I've worked closely with Professor Alan Tarr at the Rutgers University's Department of State Constitutional Law, and what generally occurs, and it happened most recently in Georgia, is the governor appoints a commission. And that commission holds public hearings, and they develop questions about the estimates on what the convention would cost, how the representatives should be chosen, how many representatives should be chosen, and should they be partisan or nonpartisan, and what are the timelines and the framework of the convention. And this commission then makes a recommendation to the state legislature about all of these things so they can appropriate the a necessary amount of money, establish campaigns. And what Professor Tarr, when he came to Wisconsin and talked to my group some years ago, explained is that the public generally does not elect or wish to elect politicians to a convention. They more likely go with educators or legal authorities, judges, attorneys, every convention that showed up in modern times has done this type of a thing. So that has to be worked out prior to the calling. And that just is one of the reasons why you don't have legislature just calling the question. They need to have some structure and advice on how to do that.
Well, Nancy, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate that. And you have a suggestion here that's a bit unusual. We have an assembly and a Senate in the Wisconsin legislature. You want to have a one-house legislature. How would that work, and what would it accomplish?
Well, the unicameral legislature, it only is in one state currently in the United States. Most states have the Senate and the Assembly. First of all, it creates a larger district, and if you have one house, or hopefully you'd have a larger district, more like a Senate, so you could reduce the number of representatives in the body. But if you think about Wisconsin and how it's worked in the past, is you have one budget passed in the Assembly, you have a similar budget passed in the Senate after the governor has introduced it, then they get together and they get this committee going and they bargain back and forth and they trade political favors, and generally spending goes up, it doesn't go down under those circumstances, policy gets stuck in the budget. All that would be eliminated. And the fact is, you could probably go to a part-time legislature with a more limited timeline and make it more efficient than it currently is.
Let's take another call now. We've got Ben joining us in Turtle Lake. Hey, Ben.
Hello.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Ed. I was hoping, first of all, could you spell your last name so I can get a hold of you sometime, or some way that I can get a hold of you? Because I totally agree with you on this issue. I've been reading the state constitution, and it's not a simple read by any stretch. there's in the beginning of it, there's the Bill of Rights, and it's similar to the National Constitution. I think it's number 9 or number 13, but one of them in the beginning of it is treason. You know, I mean, our Constitution doesn't make any sense, on the state level anyway. That's just...
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ben. And H-U-C-K is the spelling of Ed's name. And he's saying that this the state constitution is outdated. It contains stuff that's just not relevant anymore. On the other hand, it's, you know, it's a historical document in one sense, isn't it?
Well, it's a historical document. Remember, it is actually the second of two documents. The first convention was called in 1846. And that particular recommendation to the body politic was rejected, and they came back with a second convention, and that was concluded in 1848. And of course, that one passed as we became a state. One of the things I might mention that was in that 1846 document was a mandatory 10-year question to the public, and that is the legislature would have been mandated to ask the question, shall we hold a constitutional convention every 10 years, as Michigan's does currently. That was removed from the 1848 document, and so it's one of the reasons we've never had the question come up again. But remember, 1848, there's been some great inventions since then, like electricity. You know, it's an old document. In fact, Professor Tarr told my group that it's the sixth oldest in the country. Huh. So it's been around a while.
Now, Ed, as we wrap up here in our last moments, what would it take to make this thing happen, a constitutional convention? Is there any hope?
Well, I think it takes the public to start thinking about what it is that they would like to see changed, because when we had our Marquette Law convention in 2006, subsequently they wrote a law review, by the way, the following month, so it is out there. There were a lot of people that had like different recommendations of what should be changed. And then they would say, yeah, but we really don't want a convention. Well, I can tell you that from environmental policy to electoral policy to tax policy, there are a lot of recommendations out there for change that could take place.
We got to leave it there. Ed, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was Ed Huck, former executive director of the Wisconsin Alliance of Cities. His piece on the state's constitution is linked on the Central Time Facebook page.